But first, a story about gender madness and a parent's worst nightmare.
That moment the doctor places your newborn into your arms, your entire world changes. I'll do everything in my power to keep you safe. I'll fight for you every single day. For Jeff, that moment arrived times two when his twin boys, James and Jude, were born. And from the start, Jeff loved being a dad.
I was the stay-at-home parent for them. I've raised them since they were the youngest children. And we were very close and had a super tight bond right up until the courts took them away from me.
Everything changed when the boys were 2 years old. Jeff's then-wife began telling James that timeouts were only for little boys. And that
the monsters only eat boys, you better not be a boy. Scaring him in these little timeouts. And when I put my foot down and stopped that, she filed for divorce almost immediately. She's a pediatrician. And using her connections with licensed care providers, she was able to get psychologists to basically force me out of my house.
And that's when the situation escalated again. Jeff, who then still had 50-50 custody, took this video of James when he was only 3 years old.
You're a boy, right?
No. I'm a girl.
Who told you you're a girl?
Mommy.
She puts dresses on you? Oh, wow. And what else does she do?
She buys my headbands.
Uh-huh.
And she gets me hair clips.
Oh, hair clips? Okay.
She enrolled him in school as a girl under a fake girl's name. She started to claim that I couldn't cut my son's hair and that I couldn't use male pronouns. And she went to court to try to force me to use male pronouns at home to stop presenting him to the world as a boy.
This evening, there's a decision to share in a volatile custody case involving a seven-year-old's gender.
The courtroom, this case has taken on a life of its own. The central question being, should a seven-year-old live as a boy or as a girl?
The custody battles continued, but Jeff's ex-wife used her connections with psychologists to force her hand. His 50-50 custody soon became every other weekend only.
This hurt the relationship between me and my sons tremendously. And my sons were very sad about it and cried about it all the time.
So James, now 10, has lived his short life in a whirlwind of confusion.
So there was a time when every authority figure in my son's life except me was telling him he was a girl. His teacher at school, the principal, the police officer at school, the librarian was telling him he was a girl, the lunch lady was telling him he was a girl. His brother, although he didn't want to, was forced to use his girl's name.
But there's one part of James's story that makes it even more tragic.
And here's the important thing to know about my case. My son has never presented as a girl to me. He only presents as a girl when he's with his mother. So my approach was just very simple, to show my son how great it is to be a man. So we just did all the things that I did as a boy. We hunted rabbits, we tracked animals, we did hikes. We didn't need to worry about, we were able to tough everything out. And my son flourished under these conditions.
On the weekends, Jeff shared with his sons his love for boxing.
You know, he didn't think he could make it through those first workouts, you know, and he saw that we could tough it out together. We would get down there and do our 1 hour of floor work, working on our abs, working on our core, and we could do all that together. In a boxing gym, everybody that does the work gets respect. And they enjoyed that. They were treated like young men.
Their time together shaped James immensely.
Became to understand themselves as in command of their world, able to make changes in their world. And this eventually culminated in my son refusing to wear a dress at his mother's home because he likes being a man. He told the court-appointed counselor that he wanted to be a boy and wanted to go to school as a boy. The court-ordered counselor, she said, well, this child is saying he wants to be a boy. That must be because the father's making him say that. And on that basis, she recommended that the court take the children away from me because my son has to be a boy.
The boy's mother moved them to California, and Jeff says she's already beginning a full transformation for James. He last saw them over a year ago. But Jeff's battle is far from over. In fact, quite the opposite is true.
But I assure you, I will not stop fighting for my son under any conditions. We say, save James, save thousands of children, so we don't forget those other children.
He's fighting for more than just his son. He's fighting for James, but also for all the other kids whose parents just won't speak up.
And in my daily prayers, I always remember the other children and their parents who either can't or won't fight for them.
Save James. Save thousands.
I can't even imagine how you feel, and especially since you were given a gag order, were you not? You were not allowed to speak to the media. You weren't allowed to even speak to lawmakers about your case.
That's right. This interview is illegal in the state of Texas. I was banned from making any, publishing any blog posts, social media posts, publishing a newspaper article, doing any writing at all about my situation. I was also permanently banned from doing interviews, doing podcasts, appearing on television interviews, and these are all specifically laid out. I was also banned from speaking on three political topics. I'm not allowed to talk about anything about transgender issues, gender expansiveness, or whether my son is a boy or a girl. And I have told this judge, and I tell this judge every time I do an interview, I will never follow your illegal and unconstitutional order. I have contempt for her as a judge for issuing the order. I have maximum contempt for the tyrannous language of the order, and I will never follow the order. I'm guilty of maximum criminal contempt in the 301st District Court of the state of Texas, and she's obligated to put me in jail for the maximum sentence, which is 180 days in the Luce Derrick Jail in Dallas County. 4 days later, I'll be in the jail library with the writ of habeas corpus that I have already prepared. We will go to the 5th District, and we will see who's right. I'll appear in handcuffs, her in the judge's robe, but I'm not taking this tyranny, and I'm not going to stop speaking out about my son.
Wow. Is he right?
Yes. Yes.
We talked a minute ago about the fact that constitutional violations often come in pairs or trios or more. That's happening here. He's got rights. Troxell versus Granville, a case decided 22 years ago by the U.S. Supreme Court, acknowledges that he's got due process interests in raising his child. And he's also got First Amendment rights. Those are both being eroded by this order. Now, it's a little bit more complicated on the due process analysis, especially here where you've got two parents and they have different approaches. But in this circumstance, you have one parent who is coercively coaxing the child in a way that I can only characterize as abuse. This is child abuse and should be acknowledged as such.
So, yeah, go ahead.
It's true.
So, what do you do for a living?
I'm an applied mathematician. My educational background's in philosophy and mathematics.
Okay. And so you were not prepared legally to go through any of this.
Not in the slightest.
What have you learned, or what would you either do that you didn't or not do that you did right at the beginning?
I have some very specific things. When I ran for office in the state of Texas, I ran partially on a platform to reform family law, and it was based on the things that I learned. The first thing is that all the state actors, but especially the judges, will try to trick you into voluntarily waiving your constitutional rights. They will try to do this by putting you on the record saying things that you shouldn't say.
Like?
For example, when they were issuing this gag order, they held it up to me, and at that time I was pro se to save money, because I've spent $1.7 million right now.
Jeez.
So I try to save money. Well, it kept my son from being chemically castrated, so it was money well spent. So she held up this order and says, do you agree that this is the order for the last hearing? And I said, well, I've read the procedure manual. That's what I agree as the form. But I do not agree as to content. In fact, I object. Now, had I said yes, I agree that that's the order and I will sign it, in Texas, I would have waived all rights to really challenge much of that. I have to agree only as to form. Other things that they'll try to do is they'll ask you, judges will ask you questions. Do you think that maybe there's some problems with the fact that you're speaking out publicly? And they'll use that to say, well, you must have known it wasn't in their interest. They do things like that. In another case, I was given supervised visitation because I wouldn't obey the gag order, mainly because I was running for public office. And so I wanted to talk about this issue. It's part of my platform. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons they issued the gag order was to prevent me from running for office and changing the laws and limiting the judicial discretion in this state. So one of the things that that they tried to do to me was they said, well, we're gonna take your sons away from you, but you can have less supervised visitation than convicted pedophiles at $600 per 2-hour visit twice a month. And oh, by the way, if you don't do that, we're gonna say that you abandoned your son. And then I go and call the transgender psychologist who's supervising my sessions, and he says, you can't take your son out of a dress at these visits. And I said, sir, I don't participate in child abuse with my son. And no court, no government official, nobody in a professional body can order me to abuse my son, and I'm not gonna do that. So on that basis, the judge has now concluded, since I haven't abused my son at supervised visits, I have abandoned him, and has allowed my ex-wife then to move to California. 4 days this order was issued, the memorandum order, 4 days after California passed Senate Bill 701, which made California a sanctuary state. So if my children cross the state line into California, a judicial court in California must take emergency jurisdiction over my son. They will not obey Texas subpoenas. They will not return my son to me, and they can medically transition him without the consent of either parent. And a Texas judge allowed my son to go to a foreign jurisdiction to be castrated. That is the level of judicial tyranny that we're talking about in this country and in the state right now.
What is the state of your son now?
So I haven't seen him in a year and a half, but I write him lots of letters. He's written me a couple of letters. I get little signals from him. He wrote a letter to me and said, Dad, my name is Luna. And I was like, that's odd, because he doesn't want to be a girl. So I flipped over the address and he wrote his name is James on the return address. That's these little messages that I get from him. And he's told the court 40 counselors repeatedly that the reason he identifies as a girl with his mom is she doesn't love him unless he's a girl.
Okay, Janine, this is the worst nightmare of every parent. What, I mean, where do you even begin on this?
Well, I guess where I usually begin, which is, I would say file a lawsuit in federal court. The family courts are terrible, often this and other issues. I mean, as the senator identified, you have a due process right to parent your child as you see fit.
But wait. But you haven't, it's not in the Constitution.
Well,
this is kind of slippery, isn't
it's
it?
It's an unenumerated right, which is recognized as substantive due process. But it also, there's a historical tradition. So I know that substantive due process has kind of, people feel differently about it. Some people don't like the concept because that's also where abortion rights come from. But I think the right to parent your own child is a clearly established historical right. There's not really much question that we've recognized that in our culture for centuries.
We are losing that as science is now follow the science. He clearly is not a boy. He's clearly a girl, and he can eventually have babies. All this science nonsense. So you have science, and you have the courts, and you have the school districts. You have this whole apparatus that really believes that my child, your child, is their child. It's the state's child, or it's the community's child.
I'm not sure. I think there are a lot of federal courts would not be prepared to go that way. I think there are a lot of courts that would be protective of a parent's right, especially in this circumstance. I mean, this is a new thing. I mean, we've never had performing surgery on children, unnecessary surgery, chopping off body parts. This is a totally new concept, and I think it's relatively untested in the courts. And I believe that many courts, maybe not in California, but many would see things your way.
So have you, where does it stand? Have you taken it to federal court yet? Have you?
So here's another little machination that lawyers use and the courts use to prevent you from getting into federal court. So Texas has a special statute which prevents you from appealing temporary orders in family law cases. So you can only go up on a mandamus standard. That's first of all. 97% of mandamus requests are not even heard by courts. They're discretionary, unlike an appeal. So it allows the lower courts to do that. Now, one good advantage that you do have is that you can go to the Texas Supreme Court de novo, right? So you do have a chance to go up there, and I'm definitely going to do that, but I have to go through this whole appellate process. But let me give an example of abusive process. Opposing counsel, this is a Koonsfeller law firm here in Texas, most powerful family law firm in the state of Texas, arguably the most powerful law firm in the state of Texas, has been ordered to produce the final order. They have delayed doing that now for a month and a half. And the reason is they're letting her move to California before they produce the final order, because I can't mandamus it until I have a final order. So there's an abusive process that the judge won't rectify. So they have a lot of, there's a lot of things in, you know, your lawyers, you know that procedural values are real values in a lawsuit. And so in Texas, there are a lot of ways they can make it very difficult and expensive. And I expect it to cost a couple hundred thousand dollars to get up to the Texas Supreme Court. I'm probably going to be the first federal challenge of this crazy sanctuary law in California. So I'm planning on spending $500,000 to get up the U.S.
Well, you're a mathematician. What kind of money are you pulling down to be able to? I should have studied more in math.
Three jobs. I work three jobs and I run my own business. That's four. That's what I do. That's what I do. Well, it's my son.
I know. I would do the same thing.
What are you going to do, man? It's only money.